to the Mug Meeting Summaries podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our April meeting started with a roundtable discussion moderated by Kevin McGregor, who got the ball rolling by asking the first question.
Does anyone actually use Sun Machines hardware?
Ever?
We have a Sunfire V490 at work, and we're going to have some more. What I was wondering is, they don't come standard with any kind of remote administration, like the equivalent of HP's iLo, do they?
Yeah. Yes, they do. Lights Out Management.
Sorry, what's it called?
Lights Out Management is default under yours. There was another one, though, the remote console.
Yeah, there's like
the V490 it's has the full-blown top-of-the-line
right.
one.
Yeah.
But it's a network cable, like you plug in the network cable. And
yep.
It's
an RJ45, but it's serial over that. So do not plug it into your Switch.
That's
the Ilon doesn't?
The 490, it should be IP-based.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that's what I was wondering. Is there an IP-based thing as opposed to... Like, I know there's, like... Because there's this something called that they refer to in some documentation called TIP, and it says, oh, yeah, connect the TTY-B of this machine to the TTY-A of the other machine. I'm like, but that's just a serial connection. I want to manage it over the network. It's like...
Yeah.
And that's setting up IP over serial.
That's
IP over serial.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
That's just weird.
TIP?
Come on. It's all serial.
Good, yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't do slippery.
You may have
DP,
faster connection speeds, just
serial direct.
But if you, but for this, remote management stuff,
it's
you,
management.
Does that actually let you do like go to the boot ROM and stuff? It actually shows you right from as if it was a directly attached serial thing, right?
It's been 10 years. They have. I don't know. You can try. Probably.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll have to do some checking.
There should be a port directly labeled. That's labeled
LOM
ILOM.
Or something? Yeah.
Yeah, it should be labeled ILOM. It'll be a different color than the other Ethernet.
They're usually labeled NET MGT.
And there's that.
Yeah.
And it's actually like a network. It's not like a serial to, I don't know, whatever.
All depends on the model. I'm not sure what that model is, but the ones we've got that have the ILOM support.
Yeah.
It's a standard RJ45 connector, and you just plug it into a network switch, and it works.
The V490 uses Sun's remote system control, not ILOM.
That's what it was,
okay.
Which is, it's network-based. But being Sun, you'll probably have to set up an ETC boot params on another machine in order to give it its IP address.
Or you can set it probably in the boot. I mean, that's what I do.
There'll be an OpenPROM way to tell it what its IP is, right?
Yeah, should be able to. Yes.
Yeah, that'd be the other easy way.
Okay. Well, hopefully it has that.
Okay, next. Anyone got another question? Shoot.
Okay.
Or comment.
Had to replace a hard drive a couple of times over the last month. First started out with the Western Digital one that was being sold by CBIT on sale. That didn't work very well, so I went to the Seagate. That one lost the operating system three times. I repaired successfully, tried to return it. The guy says, oh, no, we're not going to take this back. It's your computer. There is a limit on large hard drives. How old is your computer? 2.5 years old, I said. So I said, well, even if I give you a new one, you'll have the same problem. So is there indeed a limit on 1.5 terabyte hard drives on 2.5-year-old computers?
No. What happens around 2 terabytes.
Two to three, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
2.2.
The threes don't work, the twos do.
Yeah, I've heard problems with the twos, but
some twos do.
But maybe you need a BIOS update for dirt properties.
Have you tried these drives in another computer?
Yeah. No, I haven't. I don't have another computer capable of running.
Make sure you win the door prize.
There you go.
Do they have some sort of adapter controller slots for a 3 terabyte drive?
You can't boot off them, can you?
Depends
on the controller.
I guess.
Well, now I know.
Strangle.
that's odd, though.
Yes.
I mean, it's some surprise.
No, 1.5 you should be okay. It's 2 and 3.
Yeah, because the second 2.5 for Seagate worked fine for about 3 weeks, and then, like I said, lost the operating system three times. So
I would say that's a hard drive issue, not a boot issue.
The that was the second drive.
Right? Yeah, it was the second
totally
drive.
Different brand.
Exactly.
So, although,
are you
honestly,
sure you're not getting having viral problems of any kind?
If you're getting two different hard drives that both died mysteriously in the same machine, replace your power supply.
Actually, the first one didn't so much die. It was using what the, I believe it's the 4K block size.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too sure what to do with that, so I returned it because it was working, but it was working.
A 1.5 terabyte drive with a 4K sector size?
Yeah, there's some of them.
I didn't think there were any.
They're failed 2 terabyte drives.
Oh, really?
Are you serious?
No. Come on.
No.
Yeah, well, why not? Just lower the recording density
slightly. One head failed, or one.
Did you actually witness like a failure? Were you there when it, when something failed? And you were running something, and you got the
process
or what happened? Just
this is
hard drives have built-in steering, so
froze. And then I tried clicking something, no change. Click something else.
And your keyboard LEDs froze up too and everything?
They froze, and then I click on the logout button, which brings up the menu, and at which point it shut down.
Okay, so you were,
how do you go
you
from that
booted,
to hard drive problem? Though?
Were you on the internet? Were you on some website? Or
no, just getting my email.
Okay, so you were actually booted into Linux. Linux was running at the time it failed.
Okay, it was running for 15 minutes. Perfect.
Okay, so that's more of a hard drive because the problems with the bigger hard drives is on boot.
Could still be the power supply.
Yes. Which was replaced, by the way, the week before.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the brand new one?
Brand new one.
I would suspect.
How much did you spend on this power supply?
What's the power rating?
Was it a cheap one?
Turbo Flower?
I think I paid something like $80. It was a 460 or something like that.
460?
Yeah. You got two rails? Try
five
rail
or
two?
I'm not too sure.
Oh, that's
or what brand was the power supply?
Yeah. I can't recall off the top of my head, but like I said, it was replaced, and like I said, it was working.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how you reached the conclusion that hard drive was the problem.
I was going through replacing components one at a time, and that happened to be the next in line. And it seemed to work for about 3 weeks, off and on.
Mm. So you had a problem with this machine, and you started to replace components? That sounds like motherboard.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's the next in line.
Try a different serial ATA slot. You've got to have it more than one port.
Yeah.
So try a different port.
Yes, I did.
Try a different bank of ports, because it'll come in blocks of two.
Tried that as well.
Yeah, then.
You might look at your BIOS settings, maybe call the vendor.
I'm
even
just
to
the components.
Add a few.
Add a few components.
Yeah.
How?
But, it seems to be working now, so.
What kind of system do you have?
Intel quad core 938, somewhere.
So, not cheap to replace.
And
not
cheap to replace.
Yeah, right. The motherboard's cheap to replace, only the processor's okay.
Yeah. Sure. And the processor's the next thing to check out after the motherboard.
Pull the drive, do a bout of Mentest 86, see what happens.
But the interesting thing is I've got two other hard drives in there as well. Like, I mean, it's loaded. Mm-hmm. And the other hard drives, test is perfect.
Have you tried just having the one drive connected? You disable the other, unplug from the power the other two drives so they're not connected in any way?
I've got to think about that. I think I probably did, and same result.
Yeah.
That's worth a try.
Checking, but they need a lot of power.
Yeah, exactly.
Push the power supply to the edge or the motherboard or something.
Yeah, exactly. Because
unplug as many non-essentials as possible, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I got a copy of some diagnostics, the current Hirons boot disk. And
Memtest, though.
Memtest, comes out perfect.
Good suggestion. How long did you let it run?
I let it run for about 4 hours.
A day. Actually, we had a server at work.
Even
a Blade server. And ran, might have been Mentest or something like that, anyway. Mm-hmm. And ran it for like 3 days on several blades at the same time, and they all looked fine. And then I realized at the end of like Friday, it's like, it was like a long weekend coming up. It's like, it's right at the end of the day. It's like, screw it, I'll just leave it running. Came back the next like Tuesday or something, and one of them had errors.
Yeah.
Actually, so I've been running for 3 days, it was fine, but then another three or so days, it's like, oh, now they're there, so great. Now what do we do?
Another reason why I think it might have been the hard drive that was the issue was because I was running the hard drive diagnostics, looking at the temperature, and the two other drives sitting at about 43 degrees. The hard drive that had problems sitting at 20 degrees higher.
Mm. You may need an extra fan.
Not necessarily, but that's kind of weird.
Both hard drives, like the first one and the replacement, were both hot?
The Western Digital, I didn't run anything on that. I just returned it, you know, because it was acting slow. The second one, when I returned, that one was running at 60-some-odd degrees.
What capacity are the other two drives?
The other two drives, 1 terabyte and half a terabyte.
Is your case packed?
Case is packed. Mm-hmm.
But you said this was a 4K sector. Is it a caviar?
Yes.
Those guys are going to run slow on the other one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
These are laptops.
Oh, substantial. Yeah.
No, that one cool. I just returned because of the 4K sector, but it was the Seagate's. Oh, okay. The first Seagate I returned. The second one seems to be going good, cross my fingers.
Just one other thing, you could do that. You can get a meter, a power meter, that you don't have to disconnect everything. It's one of those that clamps around wires. A power meter.
Yeah, but it measures.
Yes, but it uses the field rather than disconnecting.
Yeah.
And that way you don't have to disconnect anything. Look at your case specs on your power supply. Make sure everything doesn't peak or spike.
Because actually that was one of the things that that I did about a month ago. I brought it into a friend of mine who's got the hardware diagnostic tools. I plugged the power supply in. It worked fine as long as it wasn't under load. But as soon as it was under load, I think the +12... ended up putting out, I think, a +1.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
That's when I replaced the power supply.
All right, is there any other questions? We spent kind of a long time on this one. Is there anyone want to bring up something else? I mean, you can continue to talk about this, but I just thought I'd interrupt to see if someone had something else they wanted.
I do have a question.
Sure.
I've kind of lost touch with this whole thing with the CRTC and charging us for internet. Does anybody know where that currently stands?
The election's on, we'll get free internet.
That's all I need for
them. No.
Basically, what Bell was going to charge the wholesale, like Primus, they're going to charge them for, so you couldn't do unlimited internet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was all about the wholesalers not being allowed to offer unlimited. And so
what? Now what they're probably going to do is just... they're going to charge them per user. You can still offer unlimited, but if a whole bunch of them go close to unlimited, you know, almost everybody goes maximum, then they're going to charge a lot more. And so that'll be probably passed on.
I had heard a rumor that Shaw was going to start charging their customers in the very near future. Mm-hmm. Anybody else heard that?
I have.
I don't know where I heard it. It came up in a conversation with a guy and...
Haven't they long?
I just check, throw it out here, and see if anybody can verify it.
Haven't they long had transfer limit?
Well, the guy that told me his understanding was that they were going to allow a base limit, and then anything over that was going to be like $2 a gig.
Well, they do have caps. Like, you know, they look at their plans, and they have well published limits. I mean, if you buy the standard high speed, it's 60 gig a month, and the extreme is 100 gig a month. So I mean, they publish those, but right now I haven't heard anyone who's actually had any impact from that. Yeah, so it's in their contract. It's just they may start enforcing it or something.
I think the regulations for how much they can make the extra charges may be changing. It hasn't been entirely clear, but there have been things related to that.
Apparently, some guy on rainy day ended up getting charged something like $5.95 per gig.
Ooh. In other provinces, they do charge those overages.
Shaw does,
I was at a presentation.
Rogers does it.
Shaw was doing some little sort of a seminar for public input. I went there and talked to them about what their plans were and the rest of that. And the way they conducted that, there was maybe a dozen or more, a couple dozen people, with a hefty supply of geeks. And they, this is some DP or some marketing guy, I guess. They sort of laid it wide open and said, what would you guys like to see? What would you be open to? What do you think we ought to be doing with charging by the gigabyte or should be a base rate?
Right.
Yeah, there was all kinds of suggestions out there, and it didn't sound to me like they were ready to go in any particular direction. I think they're open for public opinion. It makes sense to have a certain charge per gigabyte beyond a certain base amount if they can. Well, you're getting a lot of philosophy, but the idea behind that should be that the heavy users, the guys that just on downloading everything on Pirate Bay, should have to pay for what they do in order to protect the bulk of the users who mostly just do email and want a nice little comfortable package. 95% of people would be 100 gig or whatever a month. Let them have a nice low price and drop the general rate so that then they can
Hopefully those extra charges will be somehow proportional to what it actually costs to provide
it. Which it never is.
Gouging. Yeah.
There were suggestions of like a buck a gigabyte or 50 cents or 20 cents or whatever.
Wow.
Which ought to be enough.
That's high.
That's what you pay for hard
drive. Well, the thing is that I heard that part of the problem here is Netflix. Anybody else heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know that that's really the problem, though.
Seven gigs per movie. These guys can get all the movies they want.
Yeah. It's about 2 gigs an hour.
Yeah.
For
you know how
that's
very
easily
which,
yeah, which can be
so that's like 4 gigs a movie.
Huh? No.
And you get $80 in your whatever. Sure. That's 20 movies a month under your 80.
Netflix. Here's the Shaw. Shaw's Costco is
it. Since this stuff was in the news, Netflix has now added.
That's how the internet works.
Controls for your bandwidth,
you
called quality
Netflix
levels,
money.
And at varying
somebody has to pay in some section.
And so far, Netflix is determined it's not going
so
to be.
So they're backing
bad.
Off.
Netflix lets you control how much data you're using.
Oh, that's good.
So you can go to a lower quality feed or a higher quality feed, and it defaults to the lower one.
That mitigates their impact on the internet.
But the thing is, if you go to a service provider that goes unlimited,
concept of unlimited is a little bit naive.
Yeah, there is no unlimited.
Well,
I mean, it's just naive. That's all.
Well, in what sense?
Well, in that when the bandwidth is more than what anybody ever uses anyway, my God.
But bandwidth is unlimited.
Not really.
No,
bandwidth is unlimited, but data is not. I mean, the thing is they've never charged you just for bandwidth. They charge you for bandwidth and for usage. So it's confusing the issue.
Well, they're installed plan, and their cost is the bandwidth.
But it doesn't cost more to use it than to not use it.
No.
That's why it's
actually
kind of pointless for them to...
It does. It's counterintuitive to most users, but it does. Because ISPs still operate... with the math being a humongous oversubscription model.
Yes.
Like remember oversubscription was how many modem users per bank of 48
that's
modems.
Right.
Now it's how many gigabits per second of user subscriber bandwidth per megabit of upstream bandwidth to our
Our
upstream. Like, I mean, Dryden's a bad case, but I work with the ISP there. It's a bad case because they're in the middle of nowhere, and they can't get bandwidth. Mm. 200 megabits per second is as much as anybody will bring into Dryden.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they've got, 5,000 customers each screaming because they can't all simultaneously get 10 megabits per second. It's not going to happen. And even in a major metropolitan area like Toronto, nobody's going to provision infinite amounts of bandwidth just to keep their users happy. I mean,
well, perhaps they should.
We have the same problem with telephone.
The idea is whether you think that you should. It's the principle of whether you want to encourage people to use the internet because that tends to drive innovation and ideas and usage. I mean, sure. I mean, some people are just going to sit there and download movies and all the time. But there are some arguments that suggest that we should encourage people to use the internet as much as possible because in the future, if people say, or consider it to be unlimited, then that will enable more innovation or something like that. But on the other hand, if you start charging people, then it's sort of hard to determine. Like, once you start charging people, then there's much less incentive for the
providers, the ISPs, to actually upgrade their equipment ever. They might as well just keep downgrading it slightly and charging more and more to discourage people from using it, or charging more and more and getting the same money for the same
plans.
That's
the AT&T model. That's the AT&T model. There's no, in the legislation, what was proposed, there was no protection that says you're going to charge your customer X, Y, and Z for this rate for this period of time. None of that was guaranteed to go towards infrastructure, which was the cable carrier's biggest complaint, is that, well, we can't provide it because we don't have the money to put infrastructure in. But you give Shaw or whoever, Cabletown, an extra dollar a month, who's to say they're going to use that for infrastructure or for profit? Mm-hmm. And then we'll find ourselves in the same situation again, and the cycle will repeat itself. So the point of the main protest was to say, okay, we're not opposed to paying. You know, there is fair cost for fair service. Mm-hmm. So prove fair service before you try to appropriate fair cost.
But Kevin had a point, though, because in Britain they used to charge by the minute, even for local calls on the phone. And then when people started using their phones, well, this was the early times when you had phone more, and people were avoiding using their computers because they had to pay per minute for their modem connection.
Right.
It had a drastic effect on British technology, you know? So somebody's got to step in and say, all you're doing is you're crimping our technology, you know? And let's face it, every time you turn around, somebody figures out a way to use more bandwidth, you know? So, should we tell people, don't think of any more ways, or just change the model of delivering it? I guess I haven't heard much about fiber to home yet recently, but I guess I'm just thinking, somebody pointed out, like, I had trouble with my cable TV. This was a few years ago. And they dug up my whole lawn and installed a new one. And it took, like, 3 days or something, or it spread out over 3 days. And I'm thinking, you know, roughly you get in a home repair guy, he'll charge you $1,000 a day, you know, roughly as a ballpark estimate. So it cost him like $3,000. And my brother said, why didn't they just lose a customer, you know, because you don't pay them $3,000. Like, I pay them, like, $1,000 a year or something, $1,500 a year, so it takes them years to recover their investment. Just lose me as a customer. Find some other TV provider, you know. Anyways, but they dug up my lawn and they installed the cable. But I think they'd have to do that for everybody if they had fiber to home, and then do change everything for your house and the whole thing. That would be really
Well, was it way Midwest and north here? Their fiber in Selkirk, whatever?
Through MTS, Selkirk's got it.
Selkirk is the pilot, and then Waverly West is the first implementation of it. And it's part of, you're paying part of the subsidy tax in improvement appropriation. It's similar to that ditch scandal where that guy charged twice. It's very similar to that. They'll put fiber to the home, and it'll be part of your property tax for ever so long. And then the city chips in a little bit as well. So MTS is fronting the cost, but is paying back by the city via property tax.
Governments are considering that to be an improvement to property?
Yeah.
Well, it is. Yeah, all honesty, you've got a fiber going from the street to your house. It is an improvement. Yeah. The problem is that you don't own that fiber.
Yeah.
The problem is it's in your property, but you still can't rip it up and do what you want with it.
And what if you don't use it?
That's who it reaches.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It is an improvement to your property, but
that's,
it's not yours.
That's how phone lines were first deployed in the province as well. It was through appropriation for improvement, given MTS was a public entity
What kind of speeds do your fiber get?
In Selkirk, what they have is the same as what they had before on copper.
Yeah, I was just going to say, being out in Selkirk 4 days a week, the last, let's say, a year, MTS is an absolute disaster. You'd be getting downloads at single-digit K, and then nothing. And then it would pop up 57K.
Is it the line quality of the old infrastructure?
I don't know. And then the next day, it goes like the wind. And then it just starts to download, and it's coming down to beat hell, and it just goes... Stop.
What phase of the moon was it? Was it weekend, or anything to do with weekends?
No, during the week, daytime, during the week, and it's just been nuts.
Do you have a sunspot?
Sunspots. That's it.
I had the same problem. Exact same problem. Yeah. Called in a technician to look at the wires and stuff. The problem stopped when I put in one of their Action Tech routers. Maybe that was just witchcraft or, you know, placebo effect, but it seems to be working now.
Yeah, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but in the building we're in Selkirk, not only do we have our own MTS phone panel, but there's actually a terminal or hub or whatever they call it for MTS customers in the particular area. So we have, you know, like mainline access to MTS, and I don't know what they've done with the fiber, whether we've got it or not. Some days I think we do because it really rolls, and then it disappears again.
How many people actually have home phones? Yes.
Half.
Less than half. Because, you know, I still have my home phone, but the wife and cell also can't drop the home phone. Keep DSL. DSL is rock solid. You know, it's, the infrastructure is good. You know, I don't use MTS internet, but I use their infrastructure. It's always 100%. Never.
MTS?
Yeah. Not MTS internet, but I go through less. But it's MTS infrastructure, right? It's a small cell.
Their wire.
It's their wire to the switch.
This does a highly tangential comment. I have Shaw services for everything right now, and it's fine.
TV?
Hmm?
TV too?
Yes.
Do you get an echo on your phone line sometimes?
No, but my in-laws have MTS for everything. They recently upgraded to, I don't know, some kind of, I don't know, whole home TV, PVR, I don't know, whatever. They got some sort of upgrade. Now, the funny thing is that in the last, I don't know, a couple of weeks, I think it was about the time when they got whatever it was that upgrade. My phone would ring when they call me. I'd pick up the phone and say, hello, hello, hello. And then she'd say, hello, Kevin. And I go, hi, hello. So there's seriously, it was like 5 seconds where she could not hear me. And I had to say hello several times. Then finally she would hear me. And it happens every call. And it's because of MTS. I get that with no one else, just them. They're the only people who call that happens. Bizarre.
Sensor delay.
I told them.
It's a sensor delay.
Yeah. Oh, it's a satellite delay. It's going to the moon and back a few times and then.
I checked with CSIS.
it's really an odd thing. So I told them they should really complain to MTS ASAP because that's just bizarre. And
have you asked them if it happens when they phone anyone else? Have you asked them if it happens when they phone anyone else?
I have not asked them that.
Probably only Shaw customers.
Yeah.
It's actually a feature.
But I'm the only one who's complained to them about it. I think she said something about there's something else weird going on.
So the difference, though, is that it is still a bare metal that they have analog out slam. It's like, you know, if you're going to get analog wireless Shaw, you're going to be dead good.
That isn't necessarily a good thing. Well, I saw
he's just saying the metal limits your bandwidth more than the correct.
Yeah,
it does to a point, but Shaw's VoIP compander settings limit my voice quality worse than any MTS copper pair ever has. Like, regularly, I'm talking on the phone to people on my Shaw VoIP connection, and they say that suddenly I sound like a robot. And this is talking to people who are on MTS copper wire.
I've never had any problem.
You know how when your cell phone starts to lose its signal, starts compressing the voice band? That's what my home phone sounds like. Makes sending faxes and receiving faxes a royal pain in the butt, let me tell you.
Might have a bad box in it or something.
It's been replaced twice.
Oh. MTS has been scrambling in the last month to do firmware downloads to most of their home service PVRs and stuff.
Yeah.
When they brought out the last upgrade about a month ago, I heard there was a whole bunch of problems. A lot of people had problems, and they've been downloading firmware updates ever since.
They have. They're upgrading to Media Room. They're preparing for the eventual upgrade to Media Room 2, probably in fourth quarter this year. And in the meantime, they have to upgrade the set-top boxes to 1.2 in order to run third-party partner applications like the one I'm helping deploy, which is why I know this. So that's just the firmware those PVRs used to run was literally 3 years out of date. You know, the usual MTS modus operandi.
When they were changing your modems or whatever in the control box, did they check the cable quality too? They go with a signal strength meter at the far end of the cable and so forth. Well, because often just the connectors, you know, if there's enough connectors in your ceiling or whatever, you can lose signal along there.
Mm-hmm. Talking about bridge taps?
No, just reflection losses. Yeah. And if necessary, MTS will rewire right from the DMARC to your DSL modem.
So you're getting coupler rotation.
Yep. And or reflection.
All right. Anyone else want to bring up something?
Sort of on this same line. A few months ago, Google had some kind of proposal out to a municipality that they hadn't chosen yet to run it all to fiber. One of the techers that Shaw was saying that fell through. Does anybody know anything more about that?
Where Kansas to? City.
Yeah, Kansas City.
The chosen city.
They found one?
Yeah, it's Kansas City.
Kansas City. And they're going to go fiber to the...
Yeah, low trenching, similar to the terrace band stuff being done by the city here.
The what stuff?
Terrace band. Like the... low depth trenching.
Oh
yeah, the little plow.
Hey, which side, the Missouri side or the Kansas side?
Kansas
side. Okay.
Isn't Kansas City the Missouri side?
It's
no,
both.
Kansas City's both.
Well, it's Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh,
it's half and half when you cross the bridge. You're as
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, is there another?
So that's going to be multi gigabytes to the home, right?
Single gig.
Single gig.
Yeah.
Next. We got 5 minutes, and then we're
still,
having coffee.
Still on MTS here. I've got these letters from MTS saying you have to change your email to Windows Live. You know, attention, last notice, and then they say this is not a phishing letter. This is probably exactly what it is. So I'm wondering, you know, do I click on the button here and change
legit.
To Windows Live or
Yes, but do it by going directly to webmail.mts.net and then click on the button.
Yeah, follow the instructions carefully because I did about a half a dozen of them, and if you even stray from the instructions, you can get really wound up in circles. So, but it is legit because MTS is killing their mail servers in Manitoba. Not all of them. I'm sorry.
For at MTS.net addresses.
For personal users.
Yeah.
Business users will still have access to their email.
I've already got one customer who's a personal, like just residential customer, and they can no longer send or receive email on their MTS.net account.
Yeah.
It just died one day. Coincidentally, the day after I was working on her machine.
But the essence
of what they're doing is forwarding your mail to a Hotmail. So you have to get a Hotmail account. If you prefer to use something else, you can go in the Hotmail account and turn the mail forward there, and then it ends up where you want it to be. I don't suppose you can forward it back to your MTS account.
No.
But you can send it to someone else.
There is a difference. The MTS account that's been set up through Microsoft will not expire on its own for non-use, whereas a Hotmail account... Okay,
well,
so
I heard the MTS ones are the tech there. Nice business, like 280 is logging.
Oh, okay. So they do
shouldn't.
Too. They shouldn't. The MTS rep that I talked to said they wouldn't. Yeah. But you know.
Well, that's a rep.
Yeah.
The tech
Rosie.
Oh, didn't back in the good old days, didn't this group have a mail service?
Yeah.
Back to the 80s or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
There was a...
true.
An email address, mug.ca or something like that.
Mug.md.ca.
That was a long time ago.
I connected a serial line over that.
That's almost 20 years ago now.
So if you want to be a do-it-yourself, right, I guess that's...
Running a mail server is a lot of work because of the...
You spend $9 and you spend $10 a month for a web hosting service, and you get all the email accounts you want, and they're easy to manage.
Right.
And your domain name's paid for and everything.
Or just grab Gmail and call it good.
Yeah, or call and grab Gmail and call it good.
So why is Shaw willing to pay for mail servers and not MTS?
MTS is dumb.
No, I was going to say that. Because Shaw has its own private infrastructure, and
yes,
MTS is out in the real cloud. They're more exposed.
Yeah, it's not that MTS is cutting their costs completely here. They're paying Microsoft to host it.
Are there are the limits different on like the amount of mail you can receive, or is it all the same?
No, it's pretty much a standard live account, just with a contract behind it.
The live mailboxes, aren't they much larger than the MTS pop mailboxes?
And I did the research on this. The Microsoft hosted live Windows Mail that MTS people are moved to, there is still pop access to it. And they do have an SMTP server.
Basically, I think live is 5 gigs. And if you want more, if you get close to the limit, they might up it. But Yahoo's unlimited Gmail, 7 gigs.
Don't most people have Gmail accounts and just pop everything down there anyway?
Not after Gmail completely screws you over twice.
Uh-oh. Sorry, I
asked. I'm kind of curious, what's the reliability factor? I don't know if I should even ask this, but, you know, after Bill Gates, in terms of people using Windows, Microsoft,
it's exactly
is
the
it
same.
Same, or do it's I have exactly to worry about that I'm going to get mail from hookers wanting to know, you know, my mother's birthday or something like this?
Well, do you want that email or not?
If you have an email address on the internet, you're getting that stuff anyways.
Okay, what does that have to do with whether Bill Gates is in charge of Microsoft?
I don't know. I just don't know.
They're strangely related.
I think I was motivated to start a complaint about Microsoft website, just accumulating the stuff that's wrong with them. Like, if you're going to have a monopoly, they should have some kind of responsibility. So it's stuff like bringing in new operating systems that won't run their own software, and bringing in new browsers that won't run on their own thing just so they have to upgrade everything. And just, you're sitting there trying to work, and then it says, don't worry, you can keep working while it's upgrading, but you got to restart now, you know, kind of thing. They even made a joke of that on The Simpsons. Lisa's trying to give a talk in town hall, and then her computer starts to upgrade. Yeah. And stuff like, you know, you just start a website of the pain in the ass things that Microsoft does to you. And a lot of it's just to boost their profit in, or partly it's due to just their incompetence. They just can't be bothered to fix things, you know.
When it gets to that point, the U.S. trade and tariff might do anti-monopoly trusts or something like that if... No,
okay, we're officially on coffee.
That's it.
We're done.
It's better now.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.